Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Text 51551. Drive Time on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we know that thousands of students nationwide are at home as a result of being close contacts of a case of COVID-19. But so in a bid to ensure classrooms are well ventilated, Irish schools were due to receive 35,000 CO2 monitors this week. While over 70% of them have arrived, some 10,000 monitors will be delayed by several weeks after a manufacturing fault was discovered. The Teachers Union of Ireland has branded the delay as extremely disappointing, and their General Secretary Michael Gillespie joins us now. We're also joined by architect and assistant professor at UCD, Orla Hegarty, who I'll get to in just a second. You're both very welcome to the programme. Michael Gillespie, I'll start with yourself. Some 96% of primary schools will have their full allocation, I think. So which schools are worst affected, do you know?
The secondary schools. These are large schools with, you know, anything between 30 and 60 classrooms, and they're only going to get 10 CO2 monitors. And as you know, the Delta variant is airborne. Therefore, we need sufficient ventilation rooms to clear it, because the CO2 monitors are important in this. And especially as we move into the bad weather. At the moment, we can keep the windows fully open. But as we move into the colder weather, we could get a cold snap in October. We want the students comfortable. I mean, and one of the things they're useful, they're like having a speedometer in a car. Mm-hmm. How do you know if you're over the speed limit if you don't have the monitors? Now, we had called for CO2 monitors last November. That was 10 months ago. And if we'd been heeded, those monitors would be in the schools now and we'd have road tested them.
There is, in fairness, a shortage or a huge demand, I should say, worldwide. For example, the UK government promised to deliver 300,000 monitors to British schools, and they haven't reached anywhere near that figure. I think they're at 4% or so. So in an Irish context, maybe they're not doing too bad. But I take your point. If you're in a school where there's inadequate provision of CO2 monitors, what happens, do you know? I mean, do they share monitors from class to class?
Well, I mean, that's what I suppose they'll have to do. And as I said, where it's going to become critical or more important is when the weather changes. And we saw that last year. That's why we called for them last year, that when there's a cold snap, people err on the side of caution. So they open the windows fully when they may not have to. If they had a CO2 monitor there, they know that they just have to open it slightly, maybe to bring in enough air changes. If it brings down the numbers, that's sufficient. If it doesn't bring down the numbers, open the windows a little bit more. And we move to the comfort levels. And if it gets very dangerously high, we know we can move students out of the classroom, fully ventilate the room, and then bring them back in. And that's done because we've got a metric, we've got a measurement, a digital readout on a CO2 meter.
So are you saying then that some teachers who are members of yours, they're not fully sure? Would you go as far as that? They're not fully sure if the classroom in which they're teaching is safe or not?
Well, no, what they're doing is that they're erring on the side of caution. Remember, we had this last year. What they tended to do was leave the windows fully open because safety was the priority. So they left the windows fully open. And we had the stories of, you know, kids having, you know, their big jackets on during class. So the temperatures were harder to control. Mm-hmm. So that was the problem last year.
I don't know how sustainable that is, especially when it gets to freezing temperatures. Stay with me, Michael, if you don't mind. As I say, I have Orla Hegarty, who's an architect and an assistant professor at UCD with me as well. I don't know what you make of this story, Orla. How important do you think the CO2 monitors are for ensuring good, safe classrooms?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. Obviously, there's been some production problem and people who are supplying these devices are under pressure because they're being looked for everywhere. So I think it's unfortunate that there's been a delay with this. But maybe it gives time now to put a new focus on looking at everything that can be done. Because, you know, there's no one fix here. CO2 monitors are not going to make schools safe. We need to do much more. And I think the biggest risk at the moment is that there's a sort of complacency before the cold weather comes. Clearly, there are going to be schools that need more than opening the windows. They may need to have filtration brought in. We need to look very clearly at masking policies, lunchtime policies. We have lots of evidence from other countries how they are looking very specifically at the little risk areas, you know, where people might be congregating in a locker room or they might be taking off masks for lunch breaks or whatever else, mm-hmm. and strategies of how you deal with those. So, you know, looking at the whole picture and communicating clearly, I think, is the most important thing now.
there's no one thing that will, that's like a silver bullet here, as you say. But I mean, are filters, you mentioned filtration there, are filters an alternative until schools get CO2 monitors?
Well, I think we need to look at both. I think when schools are monitoring, they probably will find that in some weather conditions, maybe on a very calm day, that it's hard to get adequate ventilation. They may have buildings that are on the more sheltered, you know, rooms on the more sheltered side of buildings. You know, they may have locker rooms that don't have adequate windows and, you know, those kind of risk areas. So I think regardless of the CO2 monitoring, we need to be doing more. And, you know, we are in a very high risk situation at the moment. And I think it's very important that we do everything and we do it very quickly and not wait for this problem to get worse. Mm-hmm. Particularly the situation in primary school children, the rates are doubling now within, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. So we already have, we know we have a problem, and as the weather gets colder at the rate that it is increasing, we're going to have very serious problems. So I think a decision needs to be made, maybe to give clearer information, and communities maybe need to come together and spread out, use churches, use the sports halls locally, use the community hall, maybe church, school,
are you saying schools should be using, are you saying, Orla, schools should be using church buildings and so on?
I'm saying that if communities come together and they want to keep their schools open, which I think everybody wants at the moment, it's critically important. We need to be a bit more imaginative than crowding children into small rooms, particularly at a time of year when there are lots of buildings maybe that are used for hospitality or other purposes during the year, where we could spread out. And you know, we just need to be a bit more imaginative. And the same when it comes to lunch breaks. I mean, the advice is that children shouldn't be eating inside around tables with their masks off. So we need to think about policies for lunch, maybe how that's managed, whether they spread out more around the school building or it's staggered, whether people can eat outside in more sheltered areas. You know, these are all the risk spots, because with this Delta variant, you can have a situation where a large number of children can be infected in a very short time by mm-hmm. one child who might be asymptomatic.
Can I ask Michael Gillespie?
You know, given the scale of spread.
Yeah, do you mind if I jump in there? Because time is against us, but I do want to get Michael Gillespie's view on that. All of those things that Orla mentioned, the filtration systems, masks being worn, staggered lunch times, even the use of churches or other buildings to try and spread people out. Are any of those being considered, Michael, in your opinion?
Well, most schools are operating, depending on their size, staggered lunch breaks. They've got staggered movement through corridors. So they put in a lot of mitigation measures like that already in schools. Now, when it comes to air filtration or mechanical ventilation, you know, the TOI would be open to and welcoming any additional mitigation measures that the public health authorities would recommend. And look, there should be no limit to these things if they guarantee health and safety of our students and our school communities.
Okay, Michael Gillespie of the TUI and architect Orla Hegarty, thank you both very much.